The Attack Zone, Episode 1.
Wait, that doesn't sound right. Wasn't there like a whole thing? Oh, okay.
The Attack Zone, Season 2, Episode 1, Real Talk. Hello, Dice fans. This is Dave, and you have stepped into the Attack Zone, Volume 2. We have new perspectives and a new approach that I think you'll like, and I'm not alone on this show. With me, I have Randy and JT. Gentlemen, how are things?
Very good. Yourself?
I can't complain. Randy?
No, things are good.
Good. You know, it's been a while since we sat around the imaginary virtual podcast table together. You feeling okay?
Well, it's only imaginary for you because we're actually hanging out together while we record this.
Yeah, you jerks, being who you are at the same time. I heard something about steak.
There was some steak earlier. There'll be some dessert later, all of which was provided by one of my vendors. So that was That's excellent.
Yeah, I'm a little jealous of the steak. All right, but let's explain what the heck it is that we're doing here, because this is a new show concept. So the Attack Zone has always been sort of a nuts and bolts approach to Dice Masters, right, guys?
Yeah, we've always looked at, you know, kind of what makes, you know, certain things tick in the game.
Yeah, and within ourselves, right? We want good technical play. We look at the cards, of course, but we also look at ourselves and our approach and how it can be improved, those sorts of things. I think we're really where we that was our bread and butter. So Volume 2 of the Attack Zone is going to bring the exact same sorts of topics, but framed a little bit differently. This time we're going to frame it through our own search for that self-improvement. So we're going to have shows for you approximately every other week. A couple of times a year, we have a planned break for family events, life events, mental health, that sort of thing. But if we're going to do this, we have to plan with the end in mind. So we're talking about getting better. And I think there's nothing that we can do. Like, we have to define what that better is for each of us. So let's set some goals, and let's put a time frame on this, too. So let's say, what do we want to accomplish between right now and Worlds 2017? So next summer, like basically by the end of the next competitive season.
Well, I'll start, I guess. I'm looking very, very near future. I'm happy to say that I'm going to be able to at least travel to Montreal the way things look right now. I've booked a ticket. I've booked a hotel and try do my best to defend my title at the Canadian National Tournament. But my goal is not necessarily to defend my title. My goal really is to play flawless. You know, it's a dice game, right? Like, we talk a lot about winning or doing well or you know, performing well in a tournament. But really, with the way things are in the meta and as wide open as things seem to be right now, I want to not make mistakes. Definitely a secondary goal is to win, but primarily I want to play my best, my absolute best. I want to see things that I should see. I want to make plays, including rerolls that I should make. I want to make the attacks that I should make and the blocks that I should make, all of those things, because I don't want a missed opportunity to come from a mistake.
I think that's fair, and I don't think, you know, you're saying short term, but that's a great goal for any game at any time, to work towards that kind of flawless play. That's really what the nuts and bolts perspective is, right?
Yep, absolutely.
I think that's pretty great. Yeah, Randy, we're going to get to you in just a second. Just to go a little further, I mean, all of us have played this game for a good little while now. We've had some time. We've had some successes. We've had some failures and all those things. But really, what we want to show with all of this is that we want to kind of put up. We really want to do more for ourselves. But what we realize is that through that, we could kind of podcast about that journey of our self-development and what we're working on and where our flaws are. That's why this episode's called Real Talk. So in any case, Randy, what about your goals?
My goals, I guess, whenever I went to U.S. Nationals or WizKids Open event, I guess as the day went on, I kind of got spooked by the big stage. I don't like playing on the camera for the live feed. I mean, I'll do it if I'm asked because I'm, you know, I want to be courteous to those hosting the event. But I really need to maintain the confidence in my team, the confidence in my game plan in the competitive environment, no matter where the venue or what the stakes are. I think sometimes I get inside my own head, and I mean, we talked about it off the air that, you know, my team builds, they're decent team builds, but I don't exactly pilot them the best on those big stages.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about that and all of our flaws a little bit. We're really going to tear each other apart. It's going to be great.
We will.
Cool. For me, my goal, so I want to win something at least at the level of a state PDC or a WizKids Open for the successes that I've had. And I'm not poo-pooing it. It's been great, and I've done well, but I've yet to actually win a higher-level tournament. I keep being the runner-up. I keep runnering up, finishing number two. I'll have some great things, and just without fail, the team that I'm playing, and this keeps happening, everything that I've runnered up, the team that I'm playing in the finals is it just seems to be the team that my deck matches up the worst against. It feels like it's been the bad matchup, or the only guy who beat me in Swiss that day is the guy I'm seeing in finals, or things like that. So my goal is to win a higher level event. I'm certainly happy to place. I'm certainly happy to runner up. A lot of people don't get to do those things either with any kind of regularity. But I want to win something a little more than the store events that I've had. Our store events had been well populated for a while. So, I mean, I was winning amongst a lot of players, but not on the stage like Randy was talking about.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. All right, so let's go into job interview mode and talk about our strengths and weaknesses. Everybody's favorite job interview question, but let's talk about our own strengths at players, because the way that we're going to be able to benefit one another and our listeners in this journey is the places that we're strong, but then also the places where we're weak that we're looking to overcome. We might our journey to overcome that might also help people who are listening to this too, and of course ourselves. So what do you see? We're going to start with our own strengths. What do you see as your own strengths that you bring to Dice Masters?
Go ahead and start off, JT.
Well, for myself, I think piloting and finding lethal, both for me and my opponent, so that, I mean, finding lethal for your opponent means that, you know, you see the threat, right? And I think that I do a good job of seeing the threat and also, you know, finding the opportune time to strike and what steps are necessary, especially in the more control-y kind of builds that I've been playing recently, you know, with Nova, energy and what to attack with, and those things play an awful big role. And will he be blocked? Won't he be blocked? How many times can I ping him? Finding lethal, I would say, is probably my biggest asset right now. And you know, we'll see where that goes and if it can be improved on. But right now, that's a big strength for me.
I would agree with that. You know, after we played and I beat you in a pretty good game in the first round of the PDC in West Virginia, and you said to me afterwards, like, you know, you actually had me like a turn or two before you did, right? I was like, oh,
yeah.
You are good at seeing it for the other side, but that has definitely has some advantages. For me, I think the strength that I bring is preparation. I try to do a lot to know the decisions that I need to make for my team in matchups or with given roles or whatever else before the day of the event. Sometimes that's from playing other teams with it, but other times that's from just rolling through things and imagining different circumstances and, okay, I got this. What am I going to buy to be able to keep my plan moving or to regroup from this or whatever else so that the day of the event – it's a little bit less mentally taxing when I see you know, something across from me that makes me want to buy my Zombie Magneto first instead of my Jinzo or my Hulk. And I don't worry about that because I prepared for that. I prepared, okay, I see this team. This is what I have to do. I've already game planned for that. I think that's an area where I'm pretty strong.
Absolutely. And that's, you know, that's one of the things that stuck out to me right off the bat. You know, we send a lot of texts back and forth, and you know, I can send you a team idea, and you'll say, well, against this, this is probably what you do, and against this, this is probably what you do, huh? And I have to say, yeah, you see it already. You that preparation, it's there, and it's kind of ingrained for you now. I think when you see certain cards, you just know the matchup and know how that should play out.
Yeah, I try. Anyway, I try. But yeah, it really does come from a lot of sitting down. You know, I have some teams set up on the table upstairs and taking up half the game table, too much to my wife's chagrin. And I'll just sit down and roll through some turns just kind of idly. I'll be working on something else or waiting for a video to upload, or just, you know, on my leisure time, on my downtime, just roll through some turns and see, what do I do this time? So what about you, Randy?
Well, I think my biggest strength is, you know, team building from the ground up, taking, you know, whether it's a method of ramp or a win condition or just some combo and building around it. I think the team building aspect is my biggest strength I bring to the table.
Randy is good at brewing. I will second that. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Yeah, so the next step to this is identify a strength for the other guys on the show. And I've got to spoil it right now. The strength that both JT and I pointed out for you, Randy, is brewing. Absolutely 100%. Yeah. Teams that, you know, when I made top 8 at U.S. Nationals, that was a team that you and I sat down and just dug deep on. When JT went to win Canadian Nationals, I believe that the substitution of Jade Giant Hulk was a Randy suggestion.
Absolutely. In fact, yeah. Randy said, "Here, why don't you play this?" And that was more or less the team I took. I think we made one or two substitutions.
Yeah.
And so that was my contribution to brewing, was helping with one or two substitutions to, why don't you play this?
How about the crazy Phoenix Force team that you took to Gen Con?
Yeah, that was
that was a lot, Randy, right?
It was definitely a lot, Randy. You know, so I said, I really want to use Infiltrate, and
I believe I told him, well, if you're going to give anything a new team affiliation, give it the Phoenix Force.
Yep. And so then it was like, well, what beat stick do we want to do this with? And I said, you know, formerly Weapon 10. And from there, the other five cards were pretty much Randy, like, well, you got to do this, and you got to do this. You got to have ping to kill off everything, which means you need Iceman. And it just flowed right out of him. So
absolutely.
So definitely, just like seeing how to put stuff together is at the top of the list for you, Matty.
Since we're on the subject, I don't know this, Randy, the team that JT and I just used at West Virginia, how much of that came from you, and how much of that was JT?
I know.
Just because you seem to have your little like tentacles into all the team builds that we seem to use.
I believe JT was testing a team, and he was trying to decide between three characters for the final spot. And he knew he was going to be running into a lot of other similar teams. This is a Poly Jinzo build.
Yep.
And, you know, he was trying to figure out that last spot. And I know it was between Zombie Magneto and Nova and maybe something else. And I just asked him, well, what do you want in the mirror match? You want Nova, don't you? He was like, yeah. Yeah, of course I want Nova in the mirror match. Well, then I guess I need to take Nova, don't I?
Yeah. And even in earlier stages, like, I think Anti-Hero was your call too. Like, in looking at ways to play and to build that team. What are we looking at? And I think,
I mean, and part of it's judging the current meta. I mean, yeah. We know, I mean, at least, you know, a couple months ago, the rare Lantern Ring was everywhere, and there's such little action hate. And while Hellblazer was such a good card on that team, Anti-Hero provides some action hate, and that I guess I've been lucky with some of my predictions for, hey, I think this will work in the current environment.
Well, don't get inside your head on that one either. We need our savant deck builder here for sure. it's funny. I wanted to laugh out loud because you talked about the mirror match. The very first thing that happened that day was JT and I sat down for the literal mirror match. I actually set my cards up exactly mirrored to how he had them. But we had the same team minus some rarity choices on like Professor X and something else.
To say that day, the only team I lost to was my own.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. Randy knows that feeling, right?
Yeah.
The high hopes
smash up
at U.S. Nationals.
U.S. Nats game
the turn
two.
Turn three kill.
Ah.
I said after that game, when for those who don't know or weren't playing the game at the time, Randy and I talked a lot about a team we called High Hopes that involved using Patch Nick Fury to double damage Avengers using Ant-Man and Hulk. And there was a way to, if you got the right rolls, you could get a kill on turn three. And so Randy and I sat down. We have the perfect mirror match across from one another. I go first. I roll the dice, and I look at the dice. And then I look at Randy and I said, do I have this? I couldn't even believe it.
I believe I just looked at it wide-eyed and was like, yeah, you got it.
And I said, I feel like I just ran you through with a sword that you forged. But anyway, that goes, and you said you kind of did. That goes back again to Randy's brewing. So, since we covered Randy Brewing extensively here, let me say, JT, I think the strength that you have is your composure. I don't know what's going on inside your head when you're playing, but externally, you look unflappable. You don't let anything go by your tone of voice. You don't appear to react to roles or other things like that, positively or negatively. You keep your composure, and I have to believe that really goes into why you're such a good pilot.
Well, thank you. It's funny. My nature is to just, focus in and tune other stuff out, especially when I'm working on a project or something for work, or even back to my school days. Or not so long ago, grad school, that it's an ability to just to focus. And I know that's a gift. I try not to take it for granted, but I appreciate hearing it and seeing the word composure rather than just focus. I take that as a compliment. And I think part of that is, just confidence in knowing my team, knowing that I've played enough reps with it that no role will surprise me. So some of that is being willing to put in the work for preparation. But I think the other part is just being willing to stay focused and always every turn, just kind of go through the same mental reps and questions. What do I do with this? What do I do if I re-roll it and it comes with this? Okay. And as long as I have a plan, I feel like, okay, I can follow a plan.
And I do agree with Dave. I think piloting is your biggest strength, being able to assess the board state. But I know when I see you play or when I'm playing you, I'm always impressed by your ability to know when to be controlling and when to go aggro. When to hold back and when to open the floodgates just enough. You typically seem to have a really good handle on doing exactly what your opponent doesn't want to do. Mm. And it's great, and you've had some success because of it.
Thanks. Appreciate that. Dave, just taking a look at you, I mentioned earlier I can send you a team idea and you'll see it like right away. I think you have just an ability to see the bigger picture. And what that means in sitting down in a tournament is that you can look across the board and very, very quickly identify the opposing plan and win condition and weaknesses and then attack those. Like, your ability to see that bigger picture and see how things fit together, I literally can send you a list of five or six cards and you know exactly how all that plays together, and really even maybe what basic actions should go with that, so that there's enough synergy, and you just see it real clearly. The big picture for you seems to come into focus really, really quickly.
Oh, thank you. Yeah.
And I do agree with JT there. You can look at a card and you know, if I see this card on this team, this is the role it's going to fill. But if I see that same card on this other team, you know, maybe it's a later game purchase in this scenario. You can assess that very quickly. And even outside of the game itself, when you're assessing cards for draft, when you're looking at a set overview, you can pick out the aces very quickly, you know, as opposed to everything else. You don't get caught up in, you know, the shininess, the newness, the, you know, whatever else it might be. And it's especially when some of your draft assessment early on in the life of the game, that really stood out to me and impressed me.
Yeah, I'll tell you, I could have been a little more right about, was it Uncommon Fatality? I thought that she was going to be the poor man's Gabi, and we just really haven't seen her a whole lot. but I appreciate that. All right, well, let's tear ourselves apart and then tear each other apart a little bit, because I did promise that was going to happen, and I don't want this to just be a love fest. People will get bored of that after a little while.
seriously, we have to climax into the big fight scene at the end.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we have to blow up New York or whatever happens in these movies. You know, hopefully by talking a little bit about our process here, other people kind of get a window into that, and they can catch something that they need to do better, or they are doing well and can hone that a little bit. But Randy, you haven't had the chance to go first yet. What do you see as your weakness?
Oh, I get impatient. I kind of mentioned it earlier, the big stage of the important tournament, I guess sometimes that gets in my head and I make the quick decision and I don't exactly, you know, evaluate the board state before I do that. I know, you know, I've got, you know, this in play. I'm going to want to purchase this. Well, you know, maybe in this scenario, it would have been best for me to hang on that energy, but I just get so focused on my game plan. And at home, I probably would take it slower, but in the environment of the bigger stage, I guess I just get a little impatient and rush my decisions.
It's the game speed thing they talk about in professional sports all the time, that cliche phrase. Yeah, I hear you there. JT?
I played a lot of chess as a kid, and so, you know, like playing moves ahead is something I try and do. The problem is oftentimes, like, I'll miss something, and then I'll play a scenario out with the wrong assumption. With, like, something changed, and I didn't catch it. One big example, I was playing a guy named Gary in a PDC in Toledo, and this is the one I played my action team, and I played a turn ahead, and I saw, okay, if I attack with this stuff and rod this character, then I was blocking at the time, and I said, if I block this way, that's fine, I can use puzzle on this character, and as long as I get a character next turn, I can use Millennium Rod and be good to go. But then Gary distracted a player, a character, and on my next turn, I didn't take that into account. I rolled what I thought I needed to roll. I passed priority, he passed back, and I just swung, and he had one extra character in the field, and I didn't have what I thought I needed for lethal because I played ahead, and I based my moves and the decision I made on a faulty assumption.
Mm. Yeah, that is dangerous. And it's got to be hard coming then from a chess background. Actually, I didn't know about your background with chess. But do you find that difficult then to kind of balance the play ahead instincts from chess with the quick way that a board state can change in this game?
No, actually this game I'm much better suited for, because I was making the same mistakes in chess.
I didn't say I had a successful background. I just said that's the game I played a lot. I made the same stupid mistakes then. So it's kind of nice to only have to play a turn or maybe two ahead and look at when is this particular die going to come in my draw? When might it come in my draw? So that I know what I need to do on this turn because it'll come next turn. So that's a lot easier rather than, you know, 5-6 moves ahead, moving, you know, continuing to force a check to force a king into a bad position. This is much better suited for me.
Right.
So what about you, Dave? Go ahead and tear yourself down.
Yeah, actually, I thought of a couple of things because I am my own biggest critic. The biggest thing that stood out to me was fatigue. When I'm playing through a Dice Masters tournament, and you know, you play through the rounds of Swiss, cool, you make the top cut, cool, you're playing in the finals, awesome. I am just getting more and more fatigued by the time I get through it. Not physically, of course, because we are sitting down playing a game, but it can be mentally taxing. Even as many decisions as you try to make, like I worry, if I think I have lethal, I like sit there and I'm doing the math like a dozen times and all those different things. And I tax myself a little bit through that. I'm definitely not playing my best by the ends of tournaments. And I need to change that if I'm going to accomplish my goal. Sometimes I have internal tilt. If a game starts bad for me, sometimes internally I'm like, oh man, I should just give this one up right now. You know, JT, our first match in top eight or top four at PDC West Virginia, you got off to a pretty solid start. I did not, and I was ready to just concede and move to the next game at that point. I think you did beat me in that one, so maybe long term. But I did even up the board state a little more than I thought I would have. I don't know if there would have been an entry for me to win or not, but it did get better. And maybe there's a decision that I missed because I was thinking, ah, geez, he's got me here. I should just save time and move to the next game. And finally, sometimes I will fixate on a concept and just try to nail a square peg into a round hole. That's more when I'm trying to team build. Brewing is not my strength, but luckily we have people around us like Randy. There's always the possibility of, let me say right here, there is no shame in net decking. None. Zero.
No.
There's no shame in it. Net deck your hearts out. As long as you're also like learning. You can't just take a team and go and show up and play it. But if you see a roster and say, oh, man, I understand this, and you like sit down and work at it, by all means, do that. You don't have to necessarily even change a character and make it your own. If you feel that you can play very well with it, do it. And that's important for me because I am a better pilot than I am a builder.
Yep, I agree wholeheartedly.
Yeah. All right, so let's now it's time for the fighting. Let's rip each other apart here a little bit. JT, you want to lead us off here?
Sure. For Randy, I would say rushing. Like the thing that sticks out of my mind are not the games that we play on my kitchen table or yours, but going back to Gen Con, we actually had to play each other. I'm playing this you know, Phoenix fastball team, and you were playing your Fireball Jocasta team, and you had me dead to rights if you just waited one turn.
Yeah.
If you waited one turn, but you saw you could get me to one, and there's Red Dragon on the table, so you're going to be able to get that one on the next turn, and so you swung with everything. You fired every last bit you could. You swung with everything. Your board was clear, and I just walked, you know, a Phoenix forced, formerly Weapon 10, right across the board with nothing you could do about it. And you knew that was coming. You knew I was going to draw the dice I needed. And you were like, doesn't matter. I'm going to make you roll it anyway, and you're going to have to do it. When you had way more blockers, if you just waited, than I could have ever worried about, you know, I ever had a chance to do anything about. So I think it's just easy for you to see a big swing and get excited and rush a turn when there's a bigger picture to be seen.
While we're picking on Randy, kind of in a similar way or maybe even hand in hand with that, what I see is that you'll get a little bit of tunnel vision. You design your team and you know the plan that you have, but sometimes you stick to that plan when the board might tell you otherwise. Sometimes, you know, like you said earlier, you make that extra purchase when you probably actually need the energy, or, you know, you buy this character when you needed that character, because you become very fixated on this is what this team is supposed to do versus how the person across the table from you is going to affect that team, which is very key to focus on. And I think really if you – once you start to see your teams as more flexible – and I think maybe it comes from you design them so you know how they should work. But I think if you start to see your teams as more flexible animals than you currently do, that's going to just be a light bulb going on, a huge turning point for you as a pilot of teams. But you do tunnel vision from time to time when you're going through. Or if things are going poorly, you kind of tunnel on that a little bit too.
Yeah, and I see both of those, and I'm not going to disagree with either of them. I think you guys are spot on the things that I'm not doing so hot.
Lay it on me. All right. What do you got? What's wrong with me?
Let's do it. So the notes I put down were rust and familiarity with sets you missed. Like, so we sit down at the West Virginia PDC and we've got a mirror match. I think Hulk or Jinzo, right? And Nova on the board, and you've got Jade Giant. And I pinged Nova, and I waited for you to knock out one of my characters, and you didn't. And so I pinged Nova again, and I waited for you to knock out one of my characters, and you didn't. So I pinged Nova again, and this is the game you won. So like I wasn't just taking advantage. This is in Swiss rounds. You this is the game that you had me beat earlier. Had you just mm-hmm. you know seen that? And I mean, look, I did the same thing at Canadian Nationals in my very first match, like. I was facing somebody playing Johnny Storm, and they fielded a character, and I'll deal one to you and one to Patch. And I was like, "Oh, okay, I'll take it." Like, not even. And I had Jade Giant out. So, like, this is a thing that you know affects everyone. But I think, you know, taking some time away to you know reevaluate and kind of rest from the game, and then say, you know what, I want back in. That's great. I hope that was super healthy for you. I'm really excited that you're back and we're able to do this. But I think right now. That there's still probably some rust to kick off. And I know that, you know, there weren't necessarily powerhouses in the sets that you missed. You know, a bunch of powerhouse covers.
Well, I missed...
That had changed a little bit, but...
I missed, like, one set, it turns out. Like, I don't know how I take a couple months away from the game with the pace of set releases. I left a little bit after... I left to take a break a little bit after, War of Light... And then I came back just as Faerun under siege was coming out. I basically missed Spider-Man, which it seems to be like the least impactful set ever, at least to this point. Maybe it'll get some toys down the road. So in that sense, I don't feel that I missed a whole lot. I have a common uncommon set from that, thanks to you, and thanks to Stuart for some extra dice. And I haven't even given thought. Like, I've looked at all the cards, and when I'm trying to say, oh, what needs to go in the slot, I look at those cards, and I haven't found anything I care about having yet from it.
Nah, none of those.
No, but I will agree with you on Rust for sure, and definitely, you know, and you talked to me after that game, and it made me think about a couple of things, and then as that tournament went on, there were definitely times when similar decisions came up, not, you know, against you later on in top four, or in some of the other matches where I don't believe I made, no, I'm sure I made other mistakes, but I don't believe I made those kinds of mistakes, as it went on, and
yeah,
hopefully,
that definitely,
you know,
got
I'm getting better and better. I'm gaining my fluency back here, but I'm not there yet.
Yeah, we played four games that day, and you won three of them, and you didn't make that mistake in any of the three games that followed that first one in Swiss round. So, you know, that's, look, all of our flaws are correctable, right? Like, we haven't covered anything that is like, well, you're not going to win anything because of that. Like, that's not true here. So, and really, the idea to bear this stuff out is so that we can work on it, and we can improve. So. That's correctable, and just take some time, you know?
I don't think a flaw exists in any player that can't be corrected in some way. I don't think there's anything that somebody has or does that cannot, you know, be worked around, learned, fixed, improved to become a better player. And hopefully that's something we get across too. How about you, Randy? Come at me, bro.
Well, I'm going to kind of piggyback off JT here, but I'm going to do it by telling a story of my own experience at the Toledo PDC. I had my rare lantern ring team. I loved it. I was going up against a vicious struggle team. And I understood, you know, what a vicious struggle team tried to do. It, you know, get ahead in the life total, and then it could trigger a, you know, back and forth volley so that you just happened to run out of life before they did. Like, I understood the premise of it. I knew what vicious struggle did. It gets pretty late in the game, and my opponent taunted one of my characters after a vicious struggle had been played. And I had my lantern ring out, so I knew as soon as I said, yes, this character's attacking, I was gonna damage my opponent, and it would end the game because I would take too much damage and die. I used their Parallax Global, I rerolled my lantern ring, you know, got it off the board. I'm like, yes, no more direct damage. And he's like, so, you know, your storm's, so now your storm has to attack. I said, yep, my storm has to attack because vicious struggle, it doesn't, you know, damage me back for combat damage. Oh, no, wait. Yes, it does. I was just under the assumption that it didn't respond to combat damage because that's the way the Captain America that he was running worked. It, you know,
right.
It reacted for non-combat damage, and I just had it in my mind that vicious struggle reacted on non-combat damage as well. And even though I understood the idea of a vicious struggle team, I just glossed over that, you know, that half of the ability, and it cost me the game. If I would have used Parallax to reroll my storm instead of the lantern ring, I'm very confident that I had control of the board state at that point, but it got away from me because I was only kind of half interested for War of Light, and then I totally missed Amazing Spider-Man, and yeah, like you, came back right before Faerun Under Siege hit, and I guess I just didn't know some of the cards as well as I thought I did.
Yeah, you know, and it's interesting that you put it that way because I've seen where players get confused, whether they're used to seeing Relentless, so you bring Swords of Revealing Light, which has the same exact global, and you don't see the familiar artwork, so you don't associate the global. Like, if there's something, don't just know Distraction, know Blink Transmutation, don't just know Relentless, know Swords of Revealing Light. You know, those things with similar globals that makes me think of as well, Randy, because I've seen people miss those globals because they forgot that it was the same thing.
Yeah, that's an excellent point.
Yeah, that's a good parable, if you will, about Rust for certain. All right, let's come at JT now because we haven't.
We can move on.
We haven't ripped apart our defending Canadian national champion yet. All right, well, so JT, I think, and I've seen this in tournaments, and I recognize this also from things that you say. You have a difficult time playing if you feel the other player across from you isn't engaging. And I don't mean engaging in playing Dice Masters necessarily, because obviously they're at a tournament, they're there to play. But if they're not engaging in conversation, I think you, a lot like me, you like a game where there's some conversation, there's some jokes, there's just, you know, it's very lighthearted. Obviously, on the table, it's competitive. But otherwise, it's lighthearted and you're enjoying playing the game. But if you sit down across from somebody who is more inwardly focused, maybe more introverted, maybe they're just having a crappy day and it is what it is, you have trouble in those games.
Yeah. Yeah, and honestly, you know, until I read the notes and kind of saw that you were going to point this out, It never even occurred to me. But looking back on some games, I absolutely have to agree with you. And I to be honest with you, I'm not exactly sure what my strategy is going to be to work on that. My wife, who doesn't play Dice Masters, who's kind of sort of bitter that I play Dice Masters, only a little bit. When I shared like this observation that you had with her, she was like, "Man, that's really insightful." I was like, "Well, yeah, he's right. Like, what do I do about this?" And it was actually a neat opportunity for me to engage with my wife about something that she just kind of shakes her head at and tolerates is a word I think I would use. That's a fair assessment, and you're definitely right. Like, I try and verbalize virtually every move I make, right? Like I try and say, I'll spend this to do that. I'll spend this to do that. I verbally pass priority when I'm the active player. I verbally pass back when I'm the inactive player. If I pass priority to the inactive player and they do something and then they don't say anything, don't do anything else, like I'm waiting for them to take further action. And it could be that they're done. I've had a few games where there's this pause, and I'm relatively comfortable with pauses, but that does have an impact on me and really on the way I play.
And then you ask, do you have anything else to do? And they say, yeah, I'm still thinking. And you're like, man, now I come off like a jerk trying to rush them.
Yeah, yeah. So there's a lot of things that play into that, but that's an astute observation for me. I appreciate it.
I agree. It can be tough, and you just have to not let it affect the way that you play.
Yeah.
Randy, your turn to smack JT in the face.
Yeah, well, me being the deck-building savant, as you put it earlier, I'm going to tear apart JT's deck building. But sometimes when he's preparing for an event, sometimes when you're preparing for an event...
Like Worlds.
You'll focus on... Yep. Well, I think I'll see this kind of team, so I want to bring this character. But the answer to that character is this character, so yep. I want to bring this one instead. And I think sometimes you go down the rabbit hole a little too far in trying to bring the answer to the answer to the answer. I'm here to rope you back in, buddy. That's what we do. But I think sometimes you can get carried away with just thinking a card is going to be, really prevalent and you need the answer to this specific card, and you'll make sacrifices on your team that might otherwise hurt it just so you have the answer to that one character.
Yeah, it's easy for me to be married to an idea. That's definitely a weakness. It's so easy to just get locked onto something. I said this when the guys over at DMDB sent me their questionnaire, but it's so much better for building when you hold on to everything with a loose grip. Like if you're willing to sub something out and just test something else, like just be willing to shuffle cards together and test new ideas. You're right. It's easy for me to hold on to something because I chase one idea, which leads to another idea, which leads to another idea, and I get locked on when I try and put stuff together.
Well, you mentioned being willing to just shuffle something together and try it out. I think that's part of, why I can see some of the deck building stuff. I'm not afraid to make mistakes. Like when I'm playing a game against you. Like, okay, this might be my best play that I do 90% of the time, but you know what? I'm going to try buying this other character. I'm going to try using this energy. I'm going to try doing that. And, I'll fall flat on my face a whole bunch of times, but you learn more about your team that way. And it is just playing with that open hand, just seeing what it can do.
And sometimes when you have that last slot, that can really take you down a rabbit hole too. Like, oh man, okay, oh, this is the answer. This is my eighth card. And then like, wait, no, because this could do this against this, so I need to have that instead. Sometimes what you want to do is just play a few games with seven cards and then say, what am I really, like, what I really wish I had in these games? What's the common denominator? But Randy, as soon as I saw that you wrote that down for JT, I thought two things. One, I thought, yes, he totally does this. And I remembered all of the conversations, on Hangouts and on Slack and other things like that, leading up to Worlds that JT had.
I really don't
he did exactly
that. I don't want to relive any of this. It was so bad.
But the second thing that I thought is, I did the same freaking thing leading up to Worlds. If anybody wants to know why, like, I carry in general, I think I average about a two and one pace, two wins and one loss pace at just about every event that I have gone to, except for Worlds. And if anybody wants to know why, it's because I did the same thing that Randy is talking about with JT. I tried to play way too much to the meta, and what am I going to see and what do I have to do about that? And not enough to what could actually win. I very nearly fell into that same trap at U.S. Nationals, but luckily we had two different qualifiers where I could try something a little nuts, and then I tried something, more like what we had prepared, and that was lucky for me. But Worlds, I didn't have that opportunity, and I took something that was just way too answer for an answer for an answer for an answer, and it didn't go very well. Now, I'm glad that it didn't go very well, because if it had gone very well, I would have been playing Dice Masters the whole weekend. I would not have had the opportunity to go around the con with Isaac and his friend Gene and Gene's son Josh. And frankly, who knows if the friendship with Isaac would have developed, and maybe Isaac wouldn't be involved with the site if I hadn't bombed out of Worlds. So I'm glad I bombed out of Worlds, because Isaac's a
God
good dude.
God bless you, Blue Worlds.
Those but, sultry tones wouldn't be on the other podcast.
I'll tell you what. But Isaac, actually, if he really wanted to, he could be on like the classical music stage. And that was the Symphony Number 2 in E-flat minor. Isaac could totally pull that off. But in any case,
I don't know if that's a compliment, Dave.
No, it is. It is. It's calming. Oh, shush. I'm now going to have to apologize to him. None of this is usable. It's probably staying in though, isn't it? But as far as like a pure gameplay perspective, that's exactly why I did so badly. And JT, I know you don't want to relive it, but I'm right there with you.
Yeah. Hey, live and learn, right?
Right on. And that's why when we were leading up to the some of the recent events that I've gone to and stuff we're going to, I've made myself promise, I am not going to try meta calls or whatever else. I am going to deal with what threatens my team. It was after Worlds when I kind of went to my holy grail of team concept that I know I've put on the War Reserve website many different times, which is a few cards that are your win condition, a few cards that make it more efficient, and a few cards that protect threats to your win condition. Because you can't defend everything. To defend everything is to defend nothing. And it was after that lesson of Worlds that I put some of that together. And so far, it hasn't really failed me. All right, so let's tell you how the show's going to work from here. We have said what we're good at. We've said what we're bad at. We've said what each other are good and bad at. So what we want to do now in future shows, we're going to bring our strengths to bear to share concepts and ideas with each other. So sometimes it's going to be, hey, Randy, who's really strong at some of the deck construction, is going to talk a little bit of a Randy masterclass of deck building, or a JT masterclass of composure, or whatever else as we work through some of these topics. But then other times it's going to be a case where I feel that fatigue is a problem for me, so I do some research. What do other CCG players do for other games? Psychologically, what can I do from a preparation standpoint, or just from a physical wellness standpoint? What can I do that's going to be better? And come to the show, and we'll talk about that based on some of my own research that I've done. So we'll all have the opportunity to be subject matter experts here on various things, whether it's because something that we're already good at is something that we can talk about, or because it's something that we're not good at, but we're going to do the research and try and bring that to each other. So as I said in the very beginning, it's very similar to what we've always done with the attack zone, but this time we want to frame it in a journey so that there is a progression, and hopefully we can all learn together, not just the three of us here talking, but also all of you who are out there listening to us talk about it.
So yeah, I mean, I would love to hear comments from anyone listening that, oh, hey, I think I share, you know, that same strength as JT, but I think I share the same weakness as Randy. So I'm really interested to hear what, you know, you guys are doing to fix these weaknesses or how to embrace this strength. And I mean, just let us know what you guys think about everything we've shared today.
Yeah, the podcasting point of view that we don't want to have is, hey, we know all this stuff. And, you know, certainly, I mean, there's a lot that we don't know. There's a lot of confidence that we speak with because we try to do a lot of research and testing, and we converse a lot about this game because we have a lot of fun doing it, and we all have a strong friendship through it. But we never want the attack zone to be in a position of, hey, we know all this stuff about this, and we're going to just, you know, all this right into you. And I don't think we ever did that before, but this is going to give us the chance to do it in a way that that a lot of shows don't, I think,
yeah.
There's a lot of other CCGs.
There's a reason my article series is titled Pretending to Know Stuff. Like, well, I never want to take the approach that this is fact. I know it because it's absolute. Like, there are some things that are that way. Like, there's game mechanics that are that way, but they're not really strategies that are that way, per se. And so I think you'll hear from all of us that this is really more about general guidelines. It is the nuts and bolts. What are the things that you can hang your hat on? What are the things that you really probably shouldn't? And go from there. But not a one of us thinks that we have this thing figured out.
No, we joked that I'm a team building savant, but there's no way. Similar to JT, for those of you that may remember in the Wayback Machine, my first article series was titled Mistakes and Learning from Them. It was all about falling flat on my face. So trust me, you can look those back up in the archive, and I haven't grown a whole lot since then. So.
Well, I think you have, though, but you know, we were talking a lot about this pre-show. You know, Randy, you specifically, you have had a hand, and a significant hand, in teams that have done well at many, many different events. If you tweak a couple things in your piloting, but you personally haven't had the opportunity to do well in these events. If you tweak a couple things with your piloting, you know, you're going to change things. If I can find ways to be less fatigued by the end of events and things like that, I'm going to be more consistent in how I play at the ends of events. You know, and similar for you, JT, as you start to look through and examine the mistakes in your play, you're going to start to develop more towards mistake-free play. Now, I think all three of those things are things that all of us want to work towards, but of course, we have our specific goals. But let's come to homework. We're going to try and do this each podcast, and maybe you guys want to have some homework listening at home or in your car or wherever you are. By the next episode, we will do what? We want this to be something that will at least incrementally address a weakness or help us progress towards our goal. For me, it's very simple. We talked a little bit about rust, and I talked a little bit about fatigue. I just want to play more. Sometimes I don't have as many opportunities as I'd like. For example, the next draft at my local store is the same weekend that my wife is presenting the High School Musical that she's been directing and has been taking a lot of time for her. So I don't think I'll be able to make that one. But online, you know, using Hangouts and things, I need to play more games. I need more reps because that's going to help me be fatigued. I need to take some reps when I'm tired and eliminate mistakes when I'm tired. I need to just play a lot more. And that's my goal. So by the next time, I want to say, you know, 2 weeks, I just want to make a lot more time to play some of these games.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think the way I want to improve, you know, one of the biggest problems that, you know, we said was me rushing in decisions and, you know, kind of getting the tunnel vision. And you know what? If I'm not set up to play the long game, to play a control team, then I need to recognize that. I need to start maybe playing teams that are built towards aggressiveness. Not necessarily playing impatiently, but playing more aggressive teams that are, you know, the payoff is higher when I do take those risks. Because the long game just isn't my cup of tea, and I need to understand that. I think I need to work on some team builds and playing some teams, testing some things out that really play into the quicker, more aggressive game.
Yeah, and for me, we use a carpentry kind of model. I want to measure twice to cut once. I got to practice replaying scenarios in response. So I've got to practice validating the thinking ahead that I've done in the turn that I'm in. So if I've thought ahead, if I know what I'm going to do, great. I've got a plan. I've got to validate that plan on the turn that it matters. And so I want to measure twice and cut once. Because what we know is this, and this is a little bit of a tease for where we might go. If you want to be consistent, just play. Like, I can play against Randy or Dave. I can play the same team the same way over and over and over again and get my face melted. But if I want to improve, I've got to evaluate. And one of the things that we hope to bring through this program is our own evaluation of our own play and what we're doing to make it better, and what we're doing to make not just our play better, but also our own evaluation better of our play. So just a little tease there for where we might go. But I've got to work on replaying that scenario in the turn that it matters.
Little more than a tease, I think, JT. In 2 weeks, you will indeed hear us talk about some of those things that you can do to evaluate your own play. So definitely a little more than a tease there, JT, but I'm not going to fault you for it. We've talked enough about all of our faults for one night, I think. Still friends?
Still friends, maybe.
Until next time, anyways.
All right, that brings us to the end of the Attack Zone. Thank you for listening. As I've always said, there are so many ways that you can spend your time. We appreciate that you're spending it with us. The Attack Zone is a production of the Reserve Pool Network, production assistance from RJ Retro, theme music courtesy of Nine Inch Nails, shared via Creative Commons at remix.nin.com, promotional consideration given in the form of review product. Don't forget to check out our other podcast, The Reserve Pool, every Thursday on www.thereservepool.com. If you'd like to get in touch, follow us on Twitter, follow us on Facebook, or send an email to mailbag@thereservepool.com. And don't forget to check out our ongoing contest to win a fantastic playmat. All right, with all that stuff out of the way, have a good day and night, whatever. Have a good time.
Yeah.
It's good to be back. See you guys later.
It is good to be back.
What was that read, man? Where did that come from? Do you know that's scripted? That was phenomenal. I couldn't do that once in 10 tries. Not ever.